Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Pavla Horáková and we start with the news. President Václav Klaus has said that the way out of the current political crisis is either a government based on the previous coalition or early general elections. In response to the latest development in the former ruling coalition, Mr. Klaus said he would not endorse a minority cabinet without a clear support in the lower house. An agreement between the three parties of the ruling coalition to form a new cabinet collapsed on Thursday, only hours after it was clinched. Prime Minister Stanislav Gross's Social Democrats failed to approve the deal that would have seen the Prime Minister resign to allow for the formation of a new majority government with the centrist Christian Democrats and the rightist Freedom Union. Social Democrat officials said the party was unhappy that the two other coalition members would appoint top party officials into the new administration while Mr. Gross had to go. The resignation of Mr. Gross and the formation of a new government was a condition for the Christian Democrats to rejoin the coalition it quit over a financial scandal plaguing the Prime Minister. Thursday's deal was meant to avert the possibility of early elections. Defence Minister Karel Kienl and Justice Minister Pavel Němec, both members of the Freedom Union, presented their resignations on Thursday night, joining five other ministers who had quit in recent days. The man who was expected to replace Stanislav Gross, the Czech Republic's ambassador to the European Union and rank-and-file Social Democrat Jan Kohout, has left for Brussels after saying that he saw early elections as the only way out of the crisis. Thursday's events mark a new turn in a drawn-out crisis in the Czech government coalition, which started 2 months ago after the Christian Democrats called on Prime Minister Stanislav Gross to step down over the controversy surrounding the financing of his Prague flat and his wife's business dealings. Stanislav Gross held the post of Czech Prime Minister for less than a year. He took over from Vladimír Špidla, who resigned last June after government parties, including his Social Democrats, were defeated in the European Parliament elections. Mr. Gross also replaced Mr. Špidla as chairman of the Social Democrats. While known as a negotiator rather than a visionary, the European Union's youngest prime minister and former railway worker failed in weeks of talks to win enough backing from his political colleagues to continue amid a scandal over his family's finances. A new poll conducted by the CVVM agency suggests that around 75% of Czechs believe that politicians should resign over unclear property or financial situations, even if it has not been proved that they broke the law. The respondents were much less critical of infidelity in marriage. Only 25% of them considered it as a reason for resignation from a political post. Respondents were also very critical of unauthorized use of academic titles. Czech international goalkeeper Petr Čech is one of six players shortlisted for the English Professional Footballers Association's prestigious Player of the Year award after an extremely successful first season at Chelsea. The 22-year-old, who comes from the West Bohemian town of Plzeň, has set a number of records in the Premier League. He was recently voted the second best goalkeeper in the world. And finally, a quick look at the weather. The weather is expected to stay the same for the next few days, that is partly cloudy, with temperatures of up to 20 degrees Celsius. I'm Pavla Horáková and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague and I'm David Vaughan. Just when we thought it was all over, the Czech political scene is once again thrown into chaos. We'll be talking to the director of a long-awaited new Czech film release. There'll be a summary of the week's business news, and Martin Mikulaj will be taking us to the beautiful but little-known Italian chapel, just by Prague's Charles Bridge, now being lovingly restored. An agreement between the ruling coalition parties on forming a new government collapsed only hours after being clinched on Thursday, dashing hopes of ending the protracted political crisis in the Czech Republic. The leadership of the strongest coalition party, the Social Democrats, unexpectedly rejected the deal made by their own top bosses. This setback has brought negotiations back to square one and further undermined the position of the Gross government. On hearing the news, two more ministers handed in their resignation, bringing the number of ministers who have left what looks increasingly like a sinking ship to seven. Daniela Lazarová joins me now in the studio. And, well, it's just 24 hours ago, it seems, the Czech Republic did have a new cabinet, as we were reporting yesterday, a cabinet that the president was ready to approve. So what happened?
Well, David, as you said, the news was totally unexpected, mainly because you naturally assumed that the party leaders who made the deal would have acted after consulting their parties. Apparently, the Social Democrat leaders overstepped the mandate given by their party, which was not prepared to go along with the deal. Now, I spoke to political analyst Václav Žák earlier today, and he believes that it was an emotional and very short-sighted decision on the part of the Social Democrats, made because the ruling party felt it had been subjugated or degraded by its smaller coalition partner, the Christian Democrats.
It seems to be so generous offers for coalition parties that the normal people, let's say, rank and file in Social Democratic Party, was really disturbed, deeply disturbed, and this wave of emotion aroused by this result of the negotiation was so deep that the people simply said, it's a defeat, complete, and we must refuse such a government. So what will happen next? I think that the people at the Social Democratic Party didn't consider, in fact.
So that was the view of Václav Žák, the political analyst. It seems to be very much a battle of wills and a very personal battle between people in the two biggest coalition parties. Where does that leave the rest of the country? I mean, what's going to happen now?
Well, now, basically, there are three possibilities. The first is that the Christian Democrats, one of the smaller coalition parties, will make some more concessions to help the strongest party of Social Democrats swallow this rather bitter pill and save face. However, that is considered highly unlikely. Then there is the possibility of a minority Social Democrat government supported by the communists. It's true that there is a faction in the Social Democratic Party which would welcome this, but as Václav Žák says, it would be an extremely damaging step for the party to take.
Many Social Democrats do not assess correctly what is the situation of the Social Democratic Party. If the Social Democratic Party would be labeled by media that they are taking communists back to power, it will hit them hard in the next election. It's clear to Premier Gross, it's clear to advisers around him, but I think that emotion in the Social Democratic Party are so high now that they simply do not see the fact that they were defeated, and before they can win again, so they must accept the defeat.
Right, and well, finally, there's a possibility that the opposition right-wing Civic Democrats are pushing very hard for, and that's a caretaker government made up of all parliamentary parties with the exception of the communists in return for a promise of early elections. So those are three possible scenarios. Of course, a great deal depends on what happens within the Social Democratic Party itself, and that is obviously undergoing a crisis and is seriously divided. There is speculation that faced with the possibility of a government supported by the communists or early elections, the ministers from Mr. Gross's own party could turn against him and force a vote on the resignation of the entire cabinet at its next session. So we'll just have to wait and see how the situation develops in the coming hours and days.
Well, thank you very much, Daniela, and I'm sure that's a story we will be coming back to again next week. Now, if anyone were to make a film about the Czech political scene, I doubt that anyone would actually believe the plot, let alone be able to follow it. But this week saw the release of a film that I think should have a great deal more appeal.
Chlapi jsou strašný prasa.
Ideální muž je nebezpečný mýtus. Je to virus napadající ženskou racionalitu.
That's an excerpt from Roman pro ženy, which translates as a novel for women, but is actually, confusingly, a film released this Thursday. The name derives from the best-selling book which the film is based on. In both, the story of a young journalist Laura, her translator mother Jana, and her Julia Roberts look-alike best friend Ingrid are told. Radio Prague saw it fit to send along a woman who likes novels to interview the film's director, Filip Rensch. Rosie Johnston started off by asking him what it was like to make the film.
The making movie is not a joke, no, it's not funny, it's a hard work because you have to wake up at 5 a.m. every day, 2 months, it's a hard work, but this work has to be a romantic comedy, yes, but nobody knows what happened behind the camera. There was war. But in front of the camera is comedy. Light comedy, I hope.
Pro Krista ještě tenhle přízrak. James Bond v Tatrách.
Já myslím, že předčasná žárlivost je nonsense.
A vezmeš si mě někdy. Oliver!
Roman Prozhený, or A Message from the Subways release, has been much anticipated in the Czech Republic. As you just heard its director, Filip Wrench, say, it's being marketed as a romantic comedy made for 20-somethings the Republic over. Stylish advertisements for the film pervade the metro, the cinema trailers, and are all over women's magazines. For the film's target audience, Filip Wrench is very much the director of the day. The child star-turned-smash-hit musical director tells me how this latest project compares with his previous ventures.
The movie Rebels, the musical from the 60s, was filmed by my script. It was funny movie for teenagers, and it's absolutely a different story, different style, and the message from the subway. It's a romantic comedy, and it is my first movie which I didn't write script. I was only director, and it's better for me.
Which leads us on to who did write the screenplay. The film is an adaptation of the book Roman Prozhený by the highly successful contemporary Czech author Michal Vivek. The title literally translates as A Novel for Women, which was a retort to those who said that only girls could like his writing. Vivek's books have been turned into films on two other occasions, but this is the first time that the author has been part of the dramatisation. It was Vivek who wrote the screenplay for the film. I asked Filip Wrench about his cooperation with Vivek.
When we finished the last version of screenplay with Michal Vivek, it was finished for him and start for me. I had to choose the actors, actress, music composers.
I get a little tequila, it is the time to get on a ride. I think I float a bit deeper, it is the time, anyway I buy it.
Wrench chose a number of French artists to create the film's score, but the soundtrack also includes a couple of very popular songs by the boldly named Czech outfit Support Lesbians.
I get a bit understanding, I see my soul's gonna light my fire. Will anybody believe seeing sun shining takes me higher? I do believe when you legalize, I'll no more mind.
With its catchy soundtrack, impeccably dressed and coiffed stars, and location shoots in the trendiest of Prague bars, the film definitely is stylish. But whether the vast Czech audiences set to see the film will find it substantial viewing is quite another matter.
That was the popular band Support Lesbians ending Rosie's report there. And from romantic comedy now to our summary of the week's business news with Brian Kennedy.
Thanks, David. The World Bank has said in a new analysis that the relaxed budget rules for the European Union's so-called Stability and Growth Pact will make it easier for new EU members, like the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Poland and Hungary, to adopt the euro, the common European currency, by the year 2009. Previously, EU governments were obliged to keep budget deficits under 3% of GDP and their debt ratio under 60% of GDP. Member states like the Czech Republic now have more leeway, which should help stimulate growth, said the World Bank, but the relaxed rules could mean governments will be slower to enact much-needed public finance reforms. Meanwhile, the Czech cabinet this week agreed on a tender for the purchase of over 230 armored transport vehicles. The army is due to announce conditions for the $1 billion tender this month, with bids due this year and delivery to start in 2007. Several companies, including Steyr, Daimler, Punch, and Patria, have reportedly already prepared initial bids. The government also agreed to spend some $180 million to buy two large transport planes, two business jets, and two helicopters. These will serve government officials and transport personnel to foreign missions and deliver humanitarian aid in crisis situations. The cabinet this week also approved a proposal aimed at reducing paperwork for businesses, as proposed by the Minister for Economic Affairs, Martin Jan. Government agencies will be required to conduct an analysis by year's end as to how their rules may impose an unnecessary burden on businesses. Under the proposal, all new legislation will also include an analysis of the potential impact on businesses. Commercial TV station operators, film distributors, and cinema owners are up in arms over the government's plan to impose a 3% fee for every showing or performance of an audiovisual work, for copying audiovisual works, and for broadcasting commercials and teleshopping. The idea is to raise revenue to support homegrown Czech filmmaking. If imposed, the fee could raise about $22 million a year. Meanwhile, Austria's operator of petrol stations, the company OMV, is in the process of buying RLCR's networks of some 70 fueling stations, this according to the Czech Business Weekly. The Dutch-owned RLCR had announced in February it would exit the Czech Republic and is reportedly negotiating with Benzina, Shell, ConocoPhillips, and Chepro, which operates Euro oil stations. Meanwhile, Karel Komarek, the owner of the Czech Business Weekly and quite a bit else in this country, has transferred his $350 million or so in engineering assets to a Dutch holding company for tax and legal reasons. He said he may make future acquisitions through that new entity.
That was Brian Kennedy with the Business Briefs. And don't forget to tune in over the weekend, when you can also hear, on top of our usual programmes, our Central European magazine, Insight Central Europe. You can find out more about that at www.incentraleurope.com. And now for the arts with Martin Micole. We'll find out about the restoration of the unique Italian chapel in Prague. And later we'll be returning to the world of film with a new animated film that has been produced in Czech-Japanese cooperation.
Prague architecture has been influenced by the cultures of different nations for centuries. Especially German and Italian architects have left their mark in the Czech capital. In the 16th century, during the reign of Emperor Rudolf II, many Italian builders and masons came to Prague to help to extend Prague Castle. And they were followed by other Italian craftsmen and traders, says Italian ambassador Giorgio Radicati.
We could say that since the 16th century, the presence of Italians in Prague was very strong. And just during the Rudolf II, this presence was bigger and bigger. And in the mid of 16th century, the Jesuits came here and the Italian community was around them.
The growing Italian community looked for a place to accommodate their social and religious needs. The Jesuits built their college called the Clementinum, and a chapel called Italian Chapel was attached to it. You can find it just a few steps from the Charles Bridge on the right side of the Vltava River. But even though the small chapel is not one of the best-known Prague monuments, it is a unique piece of architecture built on the cusp of Renaissance and Baroque periods.
Many historians of art studied this chapel because this chapel is the last example of Renaissance monument and the first example of Baroque monument here in Prague. So you have the combination of Rinascimento and Barocco in this small building. This makes this building really unique in Prague and probably in all Europe.
the chapel, which belongs to the Italian state, is not in good condition and has been closed to visitors for years. Since the chapel is an important witness of the long history of Czech-Italian cultural relations, the Italian government has now decided to have it completely restored. Even though the work has only just started, the chapel has already revealed a number of secrets.
We found a crypt. We could imagine the existence of this crypt, but we were not sure. And the people here found the crypt. The second point, we established that the paintings are not so bad as we could imagine at the surface. It means that the restoration of painting would be much easier than imagined before.
Apart from that, they have probably also discovered the name of the architect of the chapel as well as the painter of the frescoes.
The author of the project could be Mascherino, who was an architect of the Pope at the end of the 16th century. And the second is probably the name of the author of the painting on the top. It's Scotti, who was a painter who worked here in the 18th century and painted three more buildings that are around this chapel.
Italian ambassador Giorgio Radicati. The chapel restoration has two aspects. The first is architectural. Structural engineers have to ensure the stability of the building. The second is artistic. Art restorers will try to clean the frescoes that are covered by thick layers of dirt. Restorer Tomáš Berger.
Now we are in the first part of restoration when we do research about the structure of architecture, research in the paintings. Now we can see that it's a fresco paintings originally provided in the beginning of 18th century when in Prague fresco decoration, everything was painted on a flat walls, on flat mortars, which were covered by colors and lightings and shades and colors of marbles. But everything was fake, everything was just as it is architecture.
On this part of the wall, I can see that this part is already lighter than the rest. Is it a part of the wall where you already started the restoration?
Yes, in the time of research, we made some cleaning tests on the wall because we wanted to know in which state of conservation is the original decoration of the chapel. Now we see just darkened walls, which is dirty and very deteriorated.
The restoration works that have just started will continue until the end of the year, and the whole project will be co-financed by a number of different Italian companies. And now, on to a completely different subject. Animated film is a very important part of Czech cinema. Names like Jiří Trnka, Hermína Týrlová or Břetislav Pojar are very well known to every animated film fan. Friends of Břetislav Pojar's work can now enjoy a new film. As Czech animated film is well known even in Japan, Japanese film producers ask him to make a film based on a story written by Japanese writer Yeto Sato. Hiroshi, Tears in the Wind, as the film is called, tells the story of the friendship between a little boy from a city and a man who hosts him in his cottage in mountains, far away from civilization. Even though the story is very simple, it nicely depicts the feelings of a little child who learns about nature and builds a new relationship to another person. Břetislav Pojar liked the story as well and agreed to animate it.
If I remember my youth, my own youth, so I was very, very big fan of woodcraft. So this is for me very familiar, this story of a citizen, a small citizen child in the nature of the mountains, with the animals, with everything what is there.
But the story is from Japan. It's a story of a Japanese boy. Wasn't it too difficult for you to understand it, to make a story of a Japanese child?
No, finally, this is a story of a child. I don't think so. This is especially of a Japanese. Certainly in the story, it's the Japanese boy and Japanese painter and Japanese parents. But this is the story for every child in the world, can be. And I found out that because I used the nature not from Japan, I used the nature what can be in Europe, in Northern America. So for me, it was not so specialized for Japan.
Can you compare this film to any other films of yours that you did in the past, or is it something very different?
It's very different. It's very different because finally, this is a story. We can tell a documentary story. Without a big dramatic moment, it's only a description of some summer in the mountains. And so it was very difficult, and I was very curious how the film will be made.
Do you think, is it easy to tell a story for children from different countries, because different countries have different cultures?
Well, sometimes it's difficult, because the spirit of the children are different, the spirit of the nation, of the language is different. So, but if you are happy, you find some good stories, so it is in the possibility.
The Arts with Martin Mikulay brings today's programme to a close. And don't forget, you can always write to us at Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic, or send us an email to english@radio.cz. From me, David Vaughan, and all of us here at Radio Prague, goodbye.